This is the Shit You Need to Know podcast. I'm your host, Martha Riley. Have you ever been to a party and someone asked you a question that you didn't know the answer to? Yeah, me too. It fucking sucks. But that's where I come in. I'm asking the questions so you'll have the answers. Now sit back, relax, because there's shit we need to know. Welcome to this episode of the Shit You Need to Know podcast. As always, we are going to start this week off with a question. And the question I have for you this week is, who is your celebrity crush? I just got back from a bachelorette weekend in Chicago, and you know, it was the typical bachelorette party, but extra special because it was for a good friend of mine. And they also made me listen to my podcast on the road trip back. So that was fun. But before I answer my celebrity crush, I just want to say that after we had listened to the real estate episode, we started having a conversation about house buying and what we had learned about real estate. And that was the coolest fucking thing. People were listening to this podcast. Granted, they were friends of mine and I was in the car, but then they were having conversations. And that's exactly what I created this podcast for, is making those connections, having those conversations about the things that I'm teaching you, or rather, I'm getting people to teach you, because I don't pretend to know anything, or know enough, rather. But it was a great weekend, and I'm so not thrilled to be back at work this week, but I'll deal with it, because I was also in Orlando. Anyways, life update. My celebrity crush has to be Harry Styles or Timothy Chalamet. I think I was really into like the tall, white, skinny boys for a while, but now my taste in dating has definitely changed. So who knows? This could change very easily, but for a while it's always been Harry Styles. I think he's fabulous in One Direction, and Timothy Chalamet and Call Me By Your Name, one of my all-time favorite movies, can't be beat. So please let me know what your celebrity crush is. I would love to hear it. Send me a message on Instagram, send me an email at shitetoknow@gmail.com. Let's hear what you think. On today's podcast, we have Andrew Shows of Andrew Shows Fitness. And Andrew's a great guy. I worked with him for a little bit. He's an online and in-person personal trainer. He's very knowledgeable, and I'm excited for him to share all of his fitness tips and some of the psychology behind the motivation, because I know we all hate going to the gym. So how can we make it just a little bit easier? Sit back and listen to Andrew's interview.
I'm living in Austin, Texas right now. My name is Andrew, and I am an online and in-person personal trainer. I'm from the Midwest, grew up in Minnesota, and eventually went on to college at St. Olaf and got a math and exercise science degree. The next logical step for me was to become a personal trainer. And yeah, and then moved out to California last year, or I guess a year and a half ago now, and then moved to Austin this year.
What got you started on this like fitness journey? Was there one moment, or was it sort of, like you said, just a natural step?
First of all, I've been playing sports my whole life. I was an athlete as a kid, pretty much did every sport you can think of at least once. But even despite that, even being so active, I was always on the heavier side. I was actually, when I played youth football, you have to do weigh-ins to, what happens is you have to be under a certain weight to carry the football. And if you're over that weight, they put an orange sticker on your helmet, indicating that you weigh too much to carry the football. Which, you know, they do it for good reasons, because they don't want people getting hurt as much and stuff like that. But I just remember I was 1 pound over the weight limit, and I was devastated. You know, I was like, you know, I'd worked so hard to, you know, I didn't work that hard, but I was like 6 or 7 or something. Actually, no, I was 12 at this time. I was a little bit older, but I didn't make the weight limit. And I remember also I had like, it was like the first year I got like a physical, and my doctor was like asking me about my diet. And I said, my mom makes chocolate chip cookies all the time. And I love them. And he was like, well, maybe, you know, one less chocolate chip cookie a day. And I was, you know, it was another like devastating point in my life. I'm like, so you're calling it, so I'm fat. Okay, got it. I'm a fat kid. And then I went on to high school and the exact opposite thing happened where I grew probably, you know, 5 inches in like 2 years or something like that. And I went the opposite direction. I became really skinny. And then I did wrestling my freshman year. And for wrestling, you have to, again, make weight for your meets. So, and then this was in the opposite direction of you had to be under a certain amount of weight. And that was the first time I had ever been introduced to calories and, you know, tracking what you eat and how that affects your body. And that was probably the most extreme example of dieting I had ever come across, where, you know, people, we would just basically, you know, starve yourself for a week of even like fluids, which is like, it doesn't make any sense because that can actually, you know, make it easier to lose weight. But yeah. And then like going through all that and then, in college, playing football again. And college was a time where I was like at the point where I was like, I've been working out for a long time. I'm still a little bit on the heavier side. So I'd like gone the other direction again. And I just like, I wanted to understand, you know, I was in an academic setting. I really wanted to just understand the human body, understand, you know, how to actually make changes with it instead of just, you know, work out more. Because I was working out pretty much as hard as someone could work out with football practice and extra workouts and everything like that. And so I realized, I was like, okay, so that's not enough. There's something missing. And what happened was I think it was my sophomore year was when I developed symptoms for the chronic illness that I have, which is called eosinophilic esophagitis, which is inflammation of the esophagus. I started getting food stuck in my throat and had to regurgitate it and went to the Mayo, yeah, it was horrible. Went to the Mayo Clinic and, you know, they did testing and figured out that this is what I have. And so through that was when I learned about that key component, nutrition, because I knew a little bit about it, but I didn't really know a lot about it. And I hadn't actually, the next year was when I would take my actual nutrition class in school. But I remember also being at Mayo Clinic with their like head allergist, their head gastroenterologist, their nutritionist, and basically them saying, we don't know what to do. You're going to have to do your own research, figure it out on your own, come back in 5 years when we know more. And so I was like, wow, that's probably the worst thing that I could ever hear from you guys. But I didn't really have a choice. And so that was kind of the most recent spark into me doing research into nutrition. And it went beyond nutrition for, you know, weight loss and weight gain, muscle gain. It also went into disease prevention, overcoming chronic illness, and all of that stuff. So yeah, I think, so that basically all of those moments wrapped up into my life has been my fitness journey, my nutrition journey, and all of that.
That reminds me, my friend has diabetes and he went to the Mayo Clinic and they're like, yeah, we don't know what type you have. So you just have to like eat better.
Was That's he
like,
born with it?
No, it like developed.
So he developed it.
But yeah, but they don't, he could have like had it his whole life or it could have just like manifested now. I don't know. I'm repeating back what his girlfriend or fiance told me, but
gotcha.
Not important.
I mean, speaking of insulin, I was just looking into some related news about insulin and how expensive it's getting.
Yeah.
And people, and I'm watching this, like, it's like killing me inside because everyone with, this is type 2, not type 1. People with type 2 diabetes are, you know, getting really angry at these companies that are jacking up the prices of insulin and making it harder and harder for people to get. And I'm like, there is a free solution and it's easier. And I'm like, I don't know how to like.
What's the free solution though?
eat better and exercise.
Oh.
literally, and people hear that, but they don't want to believe it. Their doctor's not telling them direct, you know, they're not making a big enough point about it. I've had so many clients that come with type 2 diabetes, 100% of them get off insulin.
No way.
100, yes, I'm not kidding. The first time it blew me away because my client was like, he did tell me he was diabetic, but I just, it never came up as like a topic of discussion because, you know, he was fairly athletic. It was, you know, he was managing it on his own. It was totally fine. But 4 weeks into working with me, he goes, "Hey, I got to tell you something." He goes, "I just got off insulin this week." Okay. That's amazing. He's like, "No, you don't understand. I've been on insulin for 5 years. It took us 4 weeks."
Dang. So is it mostly just the type 2 people or type 1 as well?
Yeah. No, because type 1's a genetic.
Yeah, disease. Right.
Type 2, you bring on yourself.
Yeah.
I remember my mom even, she started working with me, I think it was either 4 or 5 years, like 4 years ago, because she had gone in for, you know, her annual physical and they did blood work and she came out pre-diabetic.
Mm.
And, you know, she's not terribly overweight. Her eating patterns were, at the time, you know, her eating patterns were relatively okay, but she didn't really know. I mean, she wasn't tracking anything, you know, she wasn't tracking anything. It was just, she thought she was doing fine. But she came back pre-diabetic and they started talking to her about, you know, you might have to go on insulin, stuff like that. And so she called me up and she goes, "Hey, this happened. Can you help me?" I was like, "Yeah, absolutely." I was like, this is a non-issue. You have nothing to worry about. We're going to take care of this." You know, so she started tracking her food intake. She started tracking, you know, cause in my Fitness Pal, it tracks how much sugar you're eating. And she went in for another updated blood work. I think it was like 4 weeks later and she got the results back and everything was perfect. And her doctors were like, "What did you do?" And she was like, "I called my son." and he fixed me. She was like, I just started. And the thing was, she was like, it was so easy. You just track your food and it's not that hard. You know, there's nothing magic about it. You just do it, you know? So anyway, those are my insulin stories.
Yeah. I actually just got done doing like a low sugar month, which don't know why I never did that when we worked together, but that's fine. I got to it eventually, but
yeah.
I lost like 5 pounds just by like cutting out pop. And that was like, whoa. Like I didn't, like I knew, but in the back of my head, I was like, I know this is bad for me, but I still like it.
Right.
Then when I actually just like cut it out, I changed to diet and it was like, not instant. I mean, it took me a whole month, but
right.
It was still crazy. So yeah, we'll get into nutrition.
I was going to say that.
Yeah.
Whole enough debate on pop we can talk about too, but yeah.
Yeah. But I do have a question. I mean, do you still let yourself eat Girl Scout cookies or is that off the table?
100%. I mean, I probably wouldn't get Girl Scout cookies. Actually, my girlfriend Marie and I were at a farmer's market a couple weeks ago. There was like 10 groups of Girl Scouts out there. Just like, it was like worse than being, so I don't know, if you go to like a tourist city, like Venice and Rome, or in Venice, California, where we lived last year, if you're at like a tourist spot, you have like people like on the streets trying to sell you stuff like left and right. We felt like we were at one of those and it's just Girl Scouts like, "Buy our cookies, come on." But so Marie and I are actually both gluten-free. Being gluten-free really helps with my illness. I get flare-ups from actually milk and dairy, dairy and gluten are the top two. They're the top two allergens actually in the United States right now. So, but if I did eat gluten, if I didn't have any problem eating gluten, I would for sure eat Girl Scout cookies.
What's great is that they're starting to like accept Venmo and stuff. And I'm like, that is next level. Like you go, that is some hustling.
I have some very strong opinions on the Girl Scout
model. We'll save that for another episode. Yeah. Maybe. All right. What do you think is most helpful for someone starting out their own fitness journey? Maybe someone who's like gone in the gym a couple of times, but sort of stops and starts, or someone who literally just doesn't know anything, because it can be really overwhelming, I feel like, to get, you know, get the right resources. So what do you recommend to take that first step?
First of all, I think that's a great point that there are a ton of options in terms of information to get from. I will say this, the loudest ones are usually the worst. And I think that goes without saying for any industry. I think in general, the loudest people are, you know, it's usually the quiet people that have the best information type of thing. That being said, you know, for someone first starting out on their fitness journey, I always go back to, you know, what's the goal? What are you trying to do? And what's your background? Because depending on those two questions, that's going to determine which direction someone goes. For example, if someone has a lot of experience with, you know, sports and fitness in general, I'm going to give them a different program than someone that doesn't, right? Because just capability-wise, people are going to have different capabilities. So with someone who doesn't have as much previous experience with, you know, sports or athletics or anything like that, one of my recommendations is find something that you like or that is the least not enjoyable, right? Because if you do something, like if for example, like you read on the internet that lifting weights is the best thing you can do for your fitness, which it totally is. If you're not capable of doing the basics of a squat, if you're not able to do those, then those aren't going to be good options for you. Unless you know how to, you know, regress things into a more basic thing and then progress them. So I would first say is find something that you like, and it doesn't have to be lifting weights. Something that's active. Some people love to go to spin class. I'm totally for that, right? If you find something like that you know is on a schedule, you can go consistently. I would totally do that. I know there are a lot of apps out there. I don't particularly like using an app for this, at least for someone starting out. And that brings me to my second point, which is find a group or one other person, find a workout partner. Because doing it alone, even for someone that like me, I've been lifting weights for 10 years. I hate going to the gym by myself. I'll do it because the habit is so ingrained in my brain now that I'll do it no matter what. But I have people, I'll call people all the time, be like, hey, you want to get a lift in? Just because I don't want to go to the gym by myself. Now, that's personal preference. Some people love going to the gym by themselves because they're around people all day long. They're like, I just want to get away. You know, it's kind of my own time. So again, it depends on their situation. But yeah, in general, find something that you like, go consistently. Oh, and then find a group or community or at least one other person that's going to hold you accountable, right? Because or hire a coach that's going to keep you accountable too, right? Anything that is outside of yourself, because being accountable to yourself is really hard. It's almost impossible. My second point is on the nutrition side, right? So that's like more of the physical side, exercising. Start with the basics, you know, with exercise and then progress. Focus on being consistent, go to the gym 3 days a week or do something extra 3 days a week and then build up from that. On the nutrition side, I would say number one, avoid all fad diets. Anything that is not flexible dieting. And the reason I say that is because flexible dieting is not a fad diet. It's actually the only one that's not a fad diet. There's like literally there's only one thing that's not a fad, and that is tracking your calories and your macronutrients over time. Everything else falls into that category and is a fad. Not saying that other things don't work, right? Like the keto works, right? Other types of diets work, but they all fall under flexible dieting, right? It's like the big umbrella. And so, yeah, I would say learn how to do that as best as possible. Learn a way to track how much you're eating, because then once you have that skill, you can do whatever you want with that.
And is that what you mean by flexible dieting? Just tracking what you eat and making sure you're like within range? Could you explain a little more about that?
Yeah, I just call it flexible dieting. I guess the technical way to talk about it would be tracking your calories, tracking your macronutrients, your fats, proteins, and carbs. The best thing someone could do starting out is download the app MyFitnessPal and become a wizard with it. Learn how to use that app so that it's second nature.
So on the flip side of that, I think what is something helpful for someone who is plateauing, like someone who's going to the gym 3 times a week, 4 times a week, but they're not really making any progress, what's something that they can do to get them to like that next level, to push past like the cliff, as you will?
I love this question because I think this is something, this is probably the biggest thing that people struggle with, especially people that come to me for advice, is they're not making progress. They're plateauing. I'll always zoom things out onto a macro level. And the macro level for me is, what are the options? The two options are, one, you keep working out, just keep trying, or two, you give up. And to me, there's an obvious answer of which one of those you have to choose, right? You have to choose the one that's not giving up, because if you give up, you'll never know if you were going to bust through that plateau. You just won't progress. Now, and that's why I come back to my second point of, I actually don't think plateaus are real for most people. Not that they don't exist. I think plateaus are a very, very real thing. But plateauing is really more accurate for people that are much further along in their fitness journey, right? Especially people that are in the beginning or middle of their fitness journey. I don't want to even call it that, because to me, the fitness journey is like your whole life, right? So, you know, we're all at the beginning technically. But someone who hasn't been doing it for that long, right? You know, 1, 2, 3 years, to me is not a very long time. I don't think most of those people are plateauing, right? I think it's just, you just need to keep doing it. You just need to keep trying. The alternative is you just stop. And if you stop, then yeah, you're going to regress. You're going to not go. But if you keep going with it, you're always going to get better. So it's something one of my coaches told me in high school, one of my favorite coaches, Mr. Faust, he said, you're either getting better or you're getting worse. And I totally believe that, right? Where there is no middle ground, there is no plateau. You're either getting better or you're getting worse. And so if you keep going, you keep trying, you're getting better. If you give up, you're going to get worse. And so out of those two options, to me, it's obvious. Now, as far as the perception of plateauing, a lot of people, first of all, it depends on like, what is your goal, right? And I think actually part of the problem is that a lot of people don't have a concrete goal. They're just like, I want to get in better shape. And you're always going to plateau on that goal, because there's no way to measure it, unless you have specific measuring tools that you're using along the way. The way to do that is you need to, in order to know that you've lost 10 pounds, you have to weigh yourself from beginning to end. Let's say you only weigh yourself once a month. Well, the problem with that is that weight fluctuates on a daily basis and sometimes dramatically. So I've had people, you know, they'll gain 2 pounds one day, lose 2 pounds, gain two, you know, gain three, lose one. It goes all over the place. And so I like to view it as kind of the stock market, right? Where the stock market's going to go up and down every day. But the long-term trend is what's most important. Same thing with weight. If you're weighing yourself every day, you're going to see the ups and downs. But if you're tracking it, you're going to see the trend. And so if that trend is not going down over the long term, then technically, yes, you're plateauing with weight. And with weight to me is the simplest one, right? Because weight is an energy balance in the body. That's the overhead. Now, how you calculate how much energy you expend is actually pretty complicated, which is why we always focus on energy intake for the most part, because that you can track pretty well. But with that, I would say, as long as you're tracking your intake and then you're consistently exercising, right? So you've set a goal of, I'm going to do 3 days a week of lifting and 2 days of cardio, or 3 days of lifting and 3 days of cardio. You have a consistent energy expenditure, so long as, you know, your daily activities are pretty similar. You know, maybe you do some extra days 1 week, or you go on a hike or something 1 week. But as long as those are pretty consistent, then you have a way to track what that energy expenditure is. So for weight loss, if you're seeing that trend plateau, there's two things that you can do, right? You can increase how much activity you're doing, or you decrease how much energy you're consuming. The expertise comes in to figuring out how to do that in the right way. Because you can't, first of all, you can't decrease your calories into oblivion, because after a while that will have the opposite effect. If you're not eating enough food, you'll actually maintain or gain weight. Well, you'll maintain weight, or you won't lose. Actually, technically, if you're not eating if you're eating low enough calories for long enough, you will always lose weight. Actually, this is something that people starve to death. If starving to death wasn't if eating too few of calories meant that you couldn't lose any more weight, people wouldn't starve to death. but they do from not eating enough food. So yes, actually technically not eating, eating really low calories for a long time will make you lose weight. But there's a lot of unhealthy things that can happen in your body because of that. Because first of all, it's going to be really stressful for the body, right? Because you're not getting enough nutrients. If your body is having to convert too much fat into energy too fast, it actually will take it from other sources. It'll take it from your muscle glycogen. It'll take it from your muscle tissue and stuff like that. There's a rate. That's what metabolism is, right? Metabolism is the speed at which your body can convert fat into energy. If you're trying to push that level too high, or if you're eating too few calories for that, and it's trying to convert body fat into energy too quickly, it can be really stressful for the body, and that raises, cortisol, and which is wreaks havoc on the body, and a lot of other things. So, long story short, yeah, if you're plateauing and you're actually tracking your weight on a daily basis over the long term, there's two things you can do, which is you can slightly decrease your calories or increase your activity levels. And I always suggest people look over the long term, right? Because if you're plateauing over 1 week, to me, I'm like, you need to not even think about that. Unless you're like someone going for like, you're like going to do a bodybuilding competition, you have to be really, really on top of things, but that's a whole nother argument. For 99% of people, being consistent over the long term will beat everything else.
The age-old question, what is more important, diet or exercise, or both?
So, as most of my questions are going to be answered, it depends. Diet or exercise, it depends on the goal. So, if someone's goal is weight loss, which I'm always going to defer to that one because that's, again, that 99% of people that I work with, that I encounter, that's their goal, is they want to lose weight. So, for weight loss, interestingly enough, or maybe not, diet is more important. And the reason for that is because it's the most consistently controllable variable, meaning our daily activity is not as consistent. Like, unless you were walking on a treadmill from when you woke up to when you went to bed at the same pace, that would be a consistent daily activity. But we don't do that, right? We sit down, we stand up, we sit down, we, do this. Some days we sit more than others, right? We can track all that. And, some people have gone really to really far lengths to track their daily expenditure. But it's just a lot easier to track your food intake. And so for weight loss, to me, that's number one, especially because that's where most people are failing in both. So I will say both are definitely super, super important. But to me, it's actually funny, when people think exercise, they think going to the gym. When I think exercise, for most people is standing up off the couch. For most people, if they stood up and walked around for 2 extra hours per day, that combined with the other thing that people are really failing at, which is caloric intake, yeah, doing those two things, you track your calories and you're consistent with it for a long period of time, and you increase your daily activity. I don't mean going to the gym. I just mean like normal daily activity, like walking around for 2 extra hours per day. That's a huge difference.
So for me, I know that getting to the gym is half the battle. And I feel like that's the case with, I don't know, a lot of people, millennials especially. We have lots of shit going on in our lives. What are your best, motivation tips to exercise and to eat well? Like, What are some tips you can give us?
Sure. This is another great question, because I think there are two aspects to this. One, you need motivation to get started. When I say motivation, what I mean by that is you need to have a vision or an image in your head of what you're trying to create, because that and one that sparks emotion, meaning you see yourself looking different or acting different or feeling different. And then you feel like you put yourself in that future moment and then feel that, to me, that's one of the best pieces of best motivators that there is. So for me, I always do this, right? One of the first really big motivators for me, which is super cliche, was Arnold Schwarzenegger. I watched his movie, or I watched actually some video clips of the movie that he was in, Pumping Iron. And I watched them and I was just blown away with the fact that the human body could look like that. I was like, holy crap, that's awesome. But I was also in college and I was, you know, doing all my academic study, and I was like, okay, but I don't actually want to or think I could ever look like Arnold Schwarzenegger. So it's not my goal to look like him. It's my goal to see what the possibilities of my physique are possible. Like, what can I do with what I have? And so I just created a mental image of what that would look like in my head, pictured myself standing in front of the mirror, what that would look like. And that became my initial motivation at first, you know, for me starting, you know, my quote unquote fitness journey, you know, going to the gym consistently and stuff. Now, that moment is fleeting. That emotion is fleeting. It doesn't last for very long. And the reason I have actually some theories on that, which are it's a dopamine response, right? Dopamine is motivation. Which is why, you know, we get addicted to so many things. We're really motivated to do certain things because they release a lot of dopamine for us. And so I think that's why having that initial motivation to do this is really important, right? Because you need that dopamine response to be motivated to do it. Then while you have that motivation, you have to set up an airtight system to keep you doing it, to make sure that those habits are consistent. Because motivation is not enough. I don't go to the gym motivated all the time as a professional. In fact, I just told you, I hate going to the gym by myself. I can't stand it. So what keeps me going to the gym when I don't want to go? Couple things. One, I put it on my calendar. I'll tell all my clients this. I'll tell anyone I talk to. Put your workouts on your calendar. Schedule them out for two reasons. One, you know that you have time to do it, right? Because most people's excuse? Oh, I don't have time. Look at your calendar, put it on your calendar. Now you have time. Okay. So you can eliminate that excuse. I don't have the energy. That's another one for people. Drink some caffeine, you know, half a cup of coffee if you have to. Don't drink too much caffeine. You can build an intolerance, right? Cycle that out every, you know, 6 to 8 weeks. Also, people that take pre-workout, like if you're taking pre-workout, please stop taking it every 6 to 8 weeks for at least a week or two. Because I know there's a lot of people out there that, myself included, I used to take pre-workout every day for like 3 years straight. It didn't do anything. I would like take pre-workout, chug a monster, you know, drink some coffee, and then I'd go to the gym. I was like, there's something wrong. So anyway, another tangent. If you're drinking a ton of caffeine, please cycle off for at least a week. 2 weeks is optimal. And then you can continue it and you'll be fine. So yeah, the other thing is energy. So I would say to that too, figure out if you work a 9-to-5, figure out, is it better for you to work out before work or after work? There's this idea that in our culture that morning people are better than everyone else. To which I say that I think that's completely wrong. I shouldn't say completely. I think that it's well-intentioned, but it's not 100%. Yes, waking up early can do a lot of good things for your life. If you're getting up early, you know, you're going to get stuff done. You're not just going to like sit around. So I think that's a big motivator for people. So if you can work out in the morning before work, awesome, do that. But if most people, working out after work is also a really good option. To which I say, number one thing, do not go home after work. If you're going to the gym after work, don't go home first. Go straight to the gym. And figure out, you know, bring your gym bag with you, put it in the car, whatever. That to me, that's been the biggest or the easiest change to make with clients is bringing their gym bag with them. Because a lot of clients are like, oh, I go home first, and then you know, I sit on the couch, and it's done, I'm over, right? I'm like, okay, don't go home. Go right from work right to the gym. That you know, that right there will save or will take out a lot of, you know, motivation that you need to go to the gym, because now it's just part of your routine. I think the most important thing with sticking to this is making it part of your routine, part of a habit. a lot of people are, you know, will use the excuse that they don't want to go to the gym and have a bad workout. Some of my best workouts have been when I wasn't motivated to go to the gym, because, and for actually a very simple reason, which is when you go to the gym unmotivated and you start working out, you start feeling really good. Because you start moving your, like, you weren't motivated, you didn't have energy, you were probably sitting, you're probably, you know, not, you know, in that good space. As soon as you go to the gym, you start moving, your endorphins start flowing, you start feeling good, and you're like, oh yeah, this is why I'm doing this. And then you actually have an amazing workout because you have a bigger contrast in, dopamine, and it feels really good. So
that was me. I used to try to nap before I worked out. That was a lost cause.
Yep.
I mean, it felt good at the time. Waking up from that nap, I was like, why? Why am I doing this?
Yep. Hijacking motivation, I think, is really key. Okay, most people are watching tons of YouTube. If you're sitting around watching YouTube feeling unmotivated, go to the YouTube search bar and type in motivation. Put on a motivational video, you'll stop watching YouTube. Or you get sucked into the motivation vortex and you're like, I'm so motivated, I have to keep watching. But more times than not, you'll be watching that and you'll be like, you know, I can do that thing I was thinking of doing. So that's another little trick I have, is like, you know, hijack what you're already doing just to make it work.
Do you have any other favorite resources that you frequent, like any favorite Instagrams or anything that people can look at?
So honestly, no. Right at this point where I'm at, I don't look at anything. But there are a lot of people putting out good information. For instance, on Instagram, I know Jordan Syatt puts out great information. Follow me at Andrew Shows Fitness on Instagram.
Yeah. Do you have anything else you want to promote?
Actually, no. I have another great resource for YouTube is Jeff Nippard. Jeff Nippard, I think, does an amazing job with putting out scientific fitness information. So I'm taking on 5 clients this month. I'm also doing a group coaching program right now that's not open for enrollment, but I will be opening that up again in the future. So look out for that. But yeah, I do actually have a couple of one-on-one client spots.
Cool.
Thank you for listening to Andrew's interview. You can follow him at Andrew Shows Fitness on Instagram, and all of that information will also be in the show notes. I hope you got a lot out of it. I know I did. And next time on the podcast, we are going to be talking all about dating apps. So stay tuned in a couple Wednesdays. We will see you then.
Thanks for listening to the Shit You Need to Know podcast. I've set up a phone number in case you have a question you need answering or just want to talk. Feel free to give me a ring at 301-941-7448. That's 301-941-SHIT. Also, don't give me a ring. No one does that. You can text the number too. I don't know why I said ring. If you enjoyed this episode of the Shit You Need to Know podcast, feel free to subscribe on iTunes and rate it 5 stars.